You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, good to have you with us. Welcome along to the NFL podcast here with William Hill, looking ahead to the divisional round of the playoffs this weekend. Two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. And as per usual, we have a stateside live from the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, the podcast host of the Beating the Book podcast, is on the line right now. First of all, a warm welcome, a good morning to you, Gil.
Good morning, Dave. You cannot call me an expert after my performance last week. Despite a winning, lovely regular season, that was not fun last week.
Form is temporary, Gil, and class is permanent, so I expect you to bounce
back
this weekend, Gil. We'll get straight stuck into the matches, and we'll talk about last week's wildcard rounds as we progress. And we start with the Kansas City Chiefs at the New England Patriots, which is scheduled for 9:35 p.m. Saturday night here in the UK. And the Chiefs 15-8 on the money line, the Patriots 4-9, and the spread is set at 5 here, Gil. The Chiefs plus 5 with extra juice at 5-6, and the Patriots minus 5 at even money. Has there been any line movement in Vegas, Gil?
Just from 4.5 to 5, which is not a key move as we, you know, would have here. Anything off 3s and 7s are considered key, or anything 2 3s and 7s are considered key. But 4.5 to 5 is the only move. So a bit of money on the Patriots. But right now, so much up in the air with Rob Gronkowski, which I'm sure we'll get into. That's really the big story right now.
Absolutely. His status is uncertain, Gil. We'll talk about Rob Gronkowski in a few moments, but let's reflect on Kansas's win in the wild card rounds last weekend against the Houston Texans. And Brian Hoyer had an absolute nightmare, Gil. The numbers suggest it was the worst ever postseason game from a quarterback, and it did look that bad as well, Gil.
It did, every bit of that. You know, I've watched football for a lot of years, and I'm not sure I remember anything quite that bad. Hoyer had a 1.7 total QBR. So you're right. What you saw with your eyes really does match what's in the box score. 1.7 total QBR, that's out of 100. Meaning, Dave, you and I could not have done much worse than that. No touchdowns, 4 picks, a fumble on top of that, 5 turnovers in all. And the interesting thing about it is, one, let me just state up front, I didn't think Brian Hoyer could be that bad. I really did not. I expected so much more from him. But he was so small on that stage in every way. It was so above him. And Bill O'Brien, the Texans head coach, really had nowhere else to go. That was the issue, where it's sort of like, you got to take him out. You got to take him out. Yeah, but who are you going to go to, Brandon Whedon? So he was sort of stuck with Hoyer, and stuck is the right word. Chiefs beat the Texans, that is, 30-0 in a game that featured a kickoff return for a touchdown on the opening kickoff. If there was ever a game that was over before it started, that was the one.
This will be, Gil, completely different against the New England Patriots, because they are led by Bill Belichick, and he is one of the, if not the greatest coach in NFL history, really. And they're going for their 5th consecutive spot in the AFC Championship game. However, as you mentioned, Rob Gronkowski's fitness is questionable at the moment. What's your gut feeling on Gronkowski? Apparently he's undergone an injection in the knee to get him as fit as he possibly could be for this matchup.
Yeah, whenever you hear the word injection, then your inclination is to always think, well, it's shooting up. They'll shoot him up like they do a horse, Dave, and he'll be right up in that game. Like, I sense you have a little cold. If we gave you a little shot right now, what's what they did before this podcast, got you up, got you ready to do this show. People don't know what efforts you go to do this.
I'm running on adrenaline, Gil. It gets me through every time.
Well, Gronk, you know, look, he missed practice on Tuesday because of the knee injury that he first suffered November 29th against the Broncos. He was limited in practice Wednesday. Then the real surprise was yesterday. He sat out their final workout, the Pats' final workout, before this football game. They don't get together on the field anymore, and reports were that he had an injection in that knee at a local hospital. So, listen, that's the last bit of information we'll have from a practice standpoint, and Bill Belichick is like, you know, getting to him is like getting through the Mossad. You don't know what's going to happen in terms of Gronk status until the game itself. So if we are to operate under the assumption, and that's what this line is, operating under the assumption that Gronk will play, the Pats are 5-point favorites. But we've talked about on this podcast, and we probably shouldn't even repeat it again, how much Rob Gronkowski means to Tom Brady. It is in the numbers. But the hope for the Patriots is that Gronk comes back. Danny Amendola, we know, will be back, as will Julian Edelman, most importantly. And if he's got that array of receivers with him, he's unstoppable. And really, his release becomes that much quicker. Think about it. This is a season where he didn't have Gronk for a game. He didn't have Amendola for two, and Edelman missed a whole bunch of time. And Brady still had 36 touchdown passes, a 102.2 passer rating. Those are some of the best marks for him in the last four seasons. So he overcame that to a large degree in a season where the Pats won their first 10 games and then floundered down the stretch, obviously. But, you know, won their first 8 games, I should say, and then floundered down the stretch. But they need Gronk. And gun to head, he'll play.
Yeah, I think he will as well, Gil. I'd be very surprised if he is ruled out. The Patriots -5 at even money. How much do you think this line moves? I know we're speaking hypothetically here, but if Gronk is ruled out, how much does this line move? And if he's confirmed, does this line move in the opposite direction?
I don't know how much it moves in the opposite direction if it's confirmed, because I think it's built in that he's playing right now. By the way, I misspoke. They did win their first 10 games, the Patriots, before losing 4 out of their last 6 to finish 12-4. But if he is ruled out, I think you see this line move quite quickly down to about 3.5, 4. I don't know that it gets to a field goal necessarily, but it could. So I think 3, 3.5, 4 for sure, somewhere in that pocket. It will move off this 5. Without question. The question is, does it get all the way to 3? And that'll be where, you know, it's anybody's guess if it goes past 3.5.
It's not just the Patriots with problems as well, Gil. The Chiefs have a couple of game time decisions from a personnel perspective.
Yeah.
Justin Houston and Jeremy Maclin both doubts for the game. And if Maclin is ruled out, which he more than likely will be, who does Alex Smith have to throw the ball to?
Well, Maclin is big. You know, look, the Pro Bowl wideout, 87 catches this year, 8 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards receiving. That high ankle sprain, which really induced tears out of him in the game against the Texans on the sideline. And it's in the numbers. Without Maclin, Alex Smith's completion percentage drops from 65.3% all the way down to 59.3%. That's a huge loss for a guy like Alex Smith, who is going to need everything to face the Patriots. And Justin Houston, as you mentioned, defensive standout linebacker, game-time decision as well. Certainly, the Chiefs could use a guy like that to combat Tom Brady. The thing on offense without Maclin, though, the Chiefs, to win this game, have to rely on the fact that they've got a quarterback in Alex Smith who is real, real protective of the football. He does not turn over the ball a lot, and he can make plays with his feet. That becomes so much easier when the Patriots have to be held honest on defense, and you take Maclin out of the mix, that's going to be a huge gain for the Patriots. Now, he may get on the football field, Will Maclin, but the question then would become, is he just out there as a decoy or not? And the Patriots will be able to figure that out pretty quickly, I think.
Where do you stand on this line as it is right now, Gil? Recording this piece on Friday afternoon, so we are around about 30 hours from game time here.
Well, I like the Patriots, and the reason I like the Patriots is, despite the fact that the Chiefs have won 11 in a row, they've done so largely on a plus 20 turnover differential. They've done that on the strength of that pretty solid, amazing stat in terms of taking the ball away and keeping the ball with lots of safety on their own end offensively. that goes out the window against a team like the Patriots. Tom Brady's not going to turn the ball over. The Patriots is a football team, whether you believe in Deflategate or not. They're not a team that turns the ball over a lot. So Kansas City really can't rely on that. And that 11-game streak is really riddled with an easy group of opponents. This is different. I fully expect the Patriots to get there. Now, of course, the caveat is if Gronk does not play, that changes everything. But I'm going to assume he does, and I like the Patriots giving the five.
That's the Saturday 9:35 game. Let's move on to the game that's in the early hours of Sunday morning here in the UK, Gil. It's the Green Bay Packers at the Arizona Cardinals. The Packers 12-5 on the money line. The Cardinals are 5-14. And the spread is at a touchdown currently. The Packers plus 7 at 10-11. The Cardinals minus 7 at 10-11. You were at the game last weekend at FedEx Field, Gil. What was your overall assessment of that wild card match with the Packers coming back and beating the Redskins?
Well, thank you for reminding me of that, young Dave. My assessment is this. You know, look, there was no bigger detractor of my own football team, the team that I grew up on, the Washington Redskins, all season. And then, of course, I made the mistake of thinking the Redskins could hold a big first quarter lead last week. And I think if they get all the points they deserve, or not deserve, but really should have had, and it's a 16-0 lead instead of 11-0, I think the outcome becomes very different at that point. I think we all got the sense that when the Redskins couldn't capitalize or maximize their lead, that Aaron Rodgers would figure out a way to come back. If you look at the box score of that game, to answer your question, Dave, there is really nothing that jumps off the page. In other words, Aaron Rodgers had the worst year of his career, you know, a year in which he had a career low in completion percentage, 60.7%, yards per attempt, 6.68. Well, just to give you an idea, against the Redskins and that big Packers win, he didn't get to either of those numbers. So it wasn't like he did a tremendous amount of damage against the Skins. What the Packers found in that game was a running game. And the Skins are a flawed football team. Look, a lot of their success, again, Skins didn't beat a winning team all year. And a lot of the Skins' success in winning their division was, one, they were in a terrible division, in addition to the fact that they never had to beat a winning team. But they also had tremendous turnover luck in fumble recoveries and stopping drives this year with fumbles. So the Skins were a mirage. So don't be fooled by the Packers beating the Skins. Skins aren't very good. And Rodgers really didn't do much last week. And now he won't have Davante Adams against the Cardinals. Davante Adams with an MCL knee sprain. So that's my long-winded answer to your question. I don't think much of the Packers headed into Arizona. Now, I don't expect them, Dave, to lose 38-8 like they did the Cardinals in Week 16. But I don't expect them to win or cover here either.
That's what you mentioned on the podcast, Gil. Just thinking back to last week's podcast, you suggested that whoever won last week's matchup out of the Packers and the Redskins were going to get crushed in Arizona the following week. And it sounds like you're standing by that statement.
Yeah, you know, look, there's a big middle between getting crushed 38-8. They could still get crushed, if not by 30, and I think they will. I think Arizona covers here. Look, in Week 16, Arizona scored twice on D. They held Aaron Rodgers to 151 yards passing. They sacked him 8 times. The Packers in all 9 times. They held Aaron Rodgers to the second worst total QBR score of his career, 9.4 out of 100. And I don't expect it to be quite that bad. You can never expect that to happen twice in a span of a few weeks. But Arizona's the better football team all the way around. And even at quarterback, I mean, you would think they're the better team all the way around, except obviously a quarterback. But you could say they're even better at quarterback this year, the way that Carson Palmer has played. Number one offense for Arizona this year in yards per play at 6.3, yards per pass attempt at 8.2. And I do think we've underrated the Packers defense all season. No one ever really talks about a Packers defense that has been pretty good. But this is Arizona's year to at least get to the conference championship. They're not going to stumble here. They're going to get this done pretty, pretty easily, I think.
You mentioned Palmer. He's undoubtedly had a career year, setting franchise records with 4,671 passing yards, 35 touchdowns. This is his third time looking for his first playoff win, though, Gil. Just to play devil's advocate here, it's never happened for Carson Palmer in the playoffs yet. Do you think he'll be nervous going into this match or excited?
Well, I think at 36 years old, I think the nerves are behind him. I don't think that's going to matter. And I know a lot of people like to make, you know, a big deal of those historical numbers. Well, he's never won a playoff game, you know, with Carson Palmer. I don't think there's enough of a sample size to even give him that kind of stigma. I think that this will be his moment on Saturday. Look, it's going to be once they pass this weekend and they go to the conference championship, then it's going to start really being a question of whether they can advance past that. But I think this is a game where they have caught the worst team left in the playoff field in the Packers, the most flawed team for sure. And what the Packers tried to do to Carson Palmer in week 16 was to blitz him. And he was 7 of 9 for 99 yards when the Packers did so in week 16. Palmer finished in the top three in the NFL, by the way, in completion percentage, yards per attempt, and total QBR, 84.1 out of 100 against the blitz this season. So not only will the Packers, you know that they lost 38-8, they're going to have to try to figure out a different way to combat a guy like Carson Palmer, because obviously coming at him didn't work at all in week 16.
And it sounds obvious, but Carson Palmer's got a fantastic wide receiver group to throw to, and Aaron Rodgers most certainly hasn't. You mentioned Devontae Adams missing. Their injury list at wide receiver stacking up, and Arizona, they've got fresh, healthy wide receivers for Palmer to target.
They do, and that is the main reason why Palmer is 19-3 as a starting quarterback since the beginning of last year. 25-5 if you take it back all the way to mid-2013, which is just the best record, over 30 games in the NFL, better than anyone, better than Brady, better than anyone. And Bruce Arians, their head coach, largely his record, 34-14 as the Arizona Cardinals head coach, is based on the fact that those wideouts have been steady as they go. Larry Fitzgerald, Brown, Floyd, those guys, John Brown and Michael Floyd, those guys have been the steady force, because certainly the Cardinals are not known for their running game. But it's the Cardinals' D that has been sneaky good. Now, they don't have Tyrann Mathieu. That's a loss. But they are a solid D all the way around. They bring pressure. And I think Aaron Rodgers is going to have a lot of trouble. It's an uphill battle. Now, 7 points is a lot, Dave. I'm not going to minimize that. It's a lot to cover in any playoff game. But divisional round games can be blowouts. And I think we're looking at one where the Cardinals get this pretty easily.
The Cardinals -7, the pick for Gill in that Saturday night match. Let's move on to Sunday's live games, Gill, and the Seattle Seahawks at the Carolina Panthers. The Seahawks even money, the Panthers 5-6, and this spread is currently at 1. The Seahawks +1 at 10-11, the Panthers -1 at 10-11. So virtual pick 'em here, Gill, and this is the one that I'm most looking forward to this weekend. Can't wait for this matchup. But before we talk about the matchup, let's reflect quickly on Seattle's win last week against Minnesota, and more precisely, Blair Walsh's missed kick as we meandered towards the end of regulation there. Walsh had an opportunity to pretty much win the match for Minnesota. Field goal from 27 yards, and he missed it. He missed it, Gil, and there was a lot of talk post that kick about whether it was his fault, the snapper's fault, the holder's fault, etc., etc., but he should be making that kick every time.
Yeah, I think when you're kicking from 27 yards out, you should make that kick every time. Though, Jay Feely, the former NFL kicker, was on Twitter and did a wonderful job of explaining how the holder, you could see on even Blair Walsh's made field goals on that game, and he made two really long ones out of the three he made. You know, the laces were not aligned properly by the holder. And for you golfers out there, I know you do a golf podcast and you come on my show to do the Masters pod as well, Dave. So you know what it's like if there's dirt clumped onto your golf club or if there's something that shouldn't be there. Well, you know, when you hit the golf ball with that on your club and it goes where you want it to go, you're sort of like, wow, oof, got lucky there. But it's an accident waiting to happen, right? You wouldn't be surprised at all if the ball just got shanked somewhere, you hooked it, you cut it somewhere, you sliced it. because of what's on your club. And basically, Jay Feely was comparing that field goal with the laces facing in to that. He says, yeah, can you drill a 47-yarder like Blair Walsh did earlier with the laces facing you? Sure, but it's an accident waiting to happen, and that's exactly what happened to Blair Walsh and the Vikings. Unbelievable.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Gil, because I was on Twitter just scrolling through and I saw Jay Feely's timeline as well. And it's great to have that insight nowadays, isn't it, with the inception of Twitter. Obviously, we're going back a few years now. But just to be able to hear from a guy that's been in the NFL for many years as a kicker and him elaborating on his thoughts via that medium, it was got some really good insight there.
It is, and not only that, it takes away some of the pain for Blair Walsh, at least publicly. Now, Blair Walsh says all the right things, right? As any kicker would, I should have made it still. It's not my holder's fault. But he knows, does Blair Walsh, that with a guy like Feely there on Twitter sort of explaining the craft of field goal kicking, there's a little bit of heat off of him. So for his personal life anyway, perhaps it goes a little better. It doesn't go any better for Vikings fans or people who had the Vikings on the money line, let's say, but for Blair Walsh himself, yes, turned out to be a good thing that Jay Feely was on Twitter.
One stat that stood out for me, Gil, and this has been doing the rounds, before Walsh's miss, kickers had been 189 of 191 on field goals of 27 yards or shorter this season. That's a 99% strike rate, so he should still have made it.
And it wasn't like he just missed. It was a split second it came off his foot. You were like, oh, there's like, oh, my God, how bad is that? But I think you can take, you know, the temperature, the cold had so much to do with that. And I mentioned, I don't know if it was on your podcast or last week, that kickers would have perhaps the biggest trouble with field goals. I wasn't right at all about that until that last one. And then I don't know if the cold can be given any responsibility for that. It was probably primarily the laces. But it certainly, I think, the cold makes us throw out everything stats-wise that we could glean out of that game otherwise. I think, you know, Russell Wilson had open receivers down the field on a couple occasions, and that ball was just so heavy, such a brick of ice, that by the time the ball got to those open receivers, the Vikings defenders were there. So I think that sort of skewed the result as well. Seahawks probably should have won that game a lot easier. But in the end, they literally escaped. I mean, that was an escape if there ever was one.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable match or end to that match, Gil. And this is a matchup that I can't wait for, because we've got two outstanding franchises here, two solid defenses going head-to-head, and we've got two of the most exciting quarterbacks in the National Football League squaring off on Sunday night. It's mouth-watering, this clash, Gil.
It is. It is the heavyweight battle of the weekend. Listen, when I did videos for your colleague Lee Phelps over at William Hill, I have the Seahawks, and I have the Seahawks at +3. But now, as we do this on Friday morning Pacific time on the West Coast in the United States, like you said at the top, this spread is much different. This is a virtual coin flip. Giving the Seahawks 3 points was just far too much, and you know, now it's kind of too late. I can't really recommended that was the bet to make, but I lean Seahawks there because, well, you know, they are the Seahawks. I think that this is a football team that is a very different one than the one that faced the Panthers way back early in the season. I believe it was week 6 when the Panthers came from behind to beat the Seahawks at Seattle 27-23. A couple things were different about the Seahawks that day, and again, no credit taken away from the Panthers. 15-1 season, Cam Newton, 20 touchdowns, one pick over the last 7 games. The Panthers' defense, 44 sacks on the season. They've just been great, and they got a home playoff game as their reward. But the couple things that were different, the Seahawks didn't have their middle linebacker Bobby Wagner versus Carolina in that game. That's big in and of itself. And Mike Sando of ESPN, who I quote very often, he pointed out something very interesting about that game as well. At that time, the Seahawks had cornerback Kerry Williams on the field. Now, Kerry Williams was subsequently released after the 10th game of the season. But when Kerry Williams was playing for the Seahawks, we always talk about players' impact when they're on the field. Let's talk about a guy who detracted from the Seahawks when he was on the field. And he was on the field against the Panthers. Opposing quarterbacks with Kerry Williams on the field had 10 touchdown passes, 4 picks. an 89.4 passer rating and 58.6 QBR when Williams was on the field. Well, with Williams off the field, everything turned on its head for the Seahawks this year defensively. They went back to being the Seahawks. Opposing quarterbacks, 4 touchdowns, 9 picks, just a 67.3 passer rating, and 48.7 QBR. So the Seahawks now come in to face the Panthers with just the defense that they want, the one that has worked for them all year, and this will be an epic battle.
It will indeed. Kerry Williams has gone to Washington now, hasn't he, Gil?
Yes. Thank you again, Dave.
I didn't want to have to bring that up, but I thought with you speaking about him, Gil, I might as well mention that.
Yes. Well, you know, the GM of the Seahawks, or the GM of the Redskins, came from Seattle and San Francisco, largely responsible for building those two teams. So he does have an affinity for Seahawks and 49ers.
Hmm. But what's the situation with Marshawn Lynch this weekend as well, Gil? Because I'm sure Seattle would love to see him suit up. But what's going on with Lynch? Because he's practicing full time, but didn't suit up last weekend in the wild card rounds, and not heard much this week.
Here's the thing with Lynch. Like with all these guys, it's so tough typically to speculate whether they'll play or not. But we do have some indication from the team as to whether or not it's going to happen based on injury report, based on reporting. The deal with Marshawn Lynch, Dave, is that he doesn't work out with the team, or he hasn't anyway, for most of this season. So he got the sports hernia. He has some abdomen issue, I don't know, beyond that, or if it's just the hernia. I'm not really even clear on that, to be honest with you. And with the Seahawks, they're kind of in wait-and-see mode with him, because last week, you know, the reason I won't speculate is last week he informed the team that he wouldn't be able to play versus the Vikings only when they boarded the plane to Minnesota at the very end of the week. So, you know, look, it sounds like he's going to play, and that's a good thing for the Seahawks. But listen, I have a guy on my show, a Vegas handicapper of 35 years, Marco D'Angelo, and his take on this is, for the Seahawks, he believes they'd be better off without him. Because with Marshawn Lynch, the Seahawks will go back to a Marshawn Lynch-heavy offense, putting the reins on Russell Wilson. And one of the things that has been a revelation for the Seahawks this year is that without Lynch, they had to rely on Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson just flourished, blossomed into this amazing quarterback that went far beyond what we thought he was capable of, even in the Super Bowl years. So Wilson has, gentlemen, we can rattle off the stats, 24 touchdowns and 1 pick over the last 7 weeks of the regular season. I mean, it was unbelievable what he did with a 132.8 passer rating, 72% completion rate. Listen, since Jimmy Graham went to the IR, 91 QBR, 16 touchdowns over the 5 weeks since Graham went to IR. So Wilson's been unbelievable. And now if you get Lynch back, does that change? God, you would hope not. But whether Lynch will play or not, I guess, but who knows?
If you were building a franchise now, Gil, and you had the pick of these two quarterbacks, which one would you take?
It's a great question. Geez, you can't go wrong with either. I mean, Cam is so big athletically, right? He's so physically imposing. But Russell Wilson just makes plays that no other quarterback can make. And look, the biggest play of that game against the Vikings last week was that missed snap that Wilson had to go scoop up. Mm. Any other quarterback might have fallen or gotten, you know, speed-wise, gotten tackled by the time he got to the ball. Not Wilson. He scoops it up. He flushes out and makes a play to Tyler Lockett that really kind of changed that game. And so I guess the question is, the answer is you can't go wrong with either. But man, it's tough to go away from Wilson when you see him getting to Super Bowls every year, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And you're kind of edging towards disregarding what happened last week against the Vikings, just because of the way that game was.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's so cold, Dave. It's so cold. I don't think you can read much into that. And again, you know, I haven't talked much about the Panthers. Look, they're great. They're 15-1, and I know that they haven't played the greatest schedule in the world, starting out 14-0 and finishing 15-1. They're very capable of winning this football game. They're very much built like the Seahawks. Really great defense with a quarterback that is the focal point of their offense. And, you know, Newton has done it without many weapons. Greg Olsen has been the real key, but I think the addition of Wagner as opposed to him not being there the first time these two teams met is a big difference in terms of combating a guy like Greg Olsen. So I think the Seahawks, listen, when it was +3, that's my pick, and that's what I've put my money on. A little different now, but this is going to be just so fun to watch.
Good stuff, Gil. And we finish the weekend with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Denver Broncos. And this is scheduled for 9:40 p.m. here in the UK on Sunday. And we don't currently have a line on the board here with William Hill UK. And it has just been announced in the last hour or so, Gil, that Antonio Brown will be missing, and that's a huge loss for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and a loss that will affect this line. This could go past the touchdown mark now, Gil.
Yeah, you know, for much of the week, this was listed as Broncos -7. We didn't have a total, but we did have spreads to play, but it wasn't widely available even then. This was one of those games where I said, if it is 7, and it really does come down to the announcement of whether Brown will or will not play. I don't ever remember there being a game where I've said that leading up to a playoff game, Dave, where I'm like, well, it all depends on whether this one guy plays or not, especially a non-quarterback.
Yeah.
But Antonio Brown means that much. And now we can't speculate because we don't know what the line's going to be. If it were 7, I would say take the Broncos at this point, but we don't know that that's what it's going to be. Couple things here that are huge. First of all, via the Elias Sports Bureau, which tracks all kinds of historical data in all sports, not just the NFL. But there has never been, we're about to see history now, because without Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams, the Steelers will be without their leading receiver and their leading rusher this season. Elias Sports Bureau reports that there has never been a playoff game in which neither the team's leading rusher nor the team's leading receiver from that season played. Never.
Wow.
It's never happened. So there have been 519 playoff games in the history of the AFL and NFL, including the 4 from this past weekend. There has never been a circumstance quite like this.
And we're assuming here that Ben Roethlisberger is guaranteed to suit up and be effective under center as well, because he's dealing with torn ligaments. He's got a sprain in his right shoulder as well, Gil, and he's described himself as hour by hour, not day by day, Gil, hour by hour,
yeah.
Ben Roethlisberger. So those guys were so influential, Roethlisberger and Brown, when they beat the Broncos at home earlier on in the season. But even if Roethlisberger is active in this match, Gil, he's not going to be fully fit. He just can't be.
Yeah, he had the sprained AC joint in the throwing shoulder. Then he admitted he had torn ligaments in that throwing shoulder. And yes, hour by hour, as you say, instead of day to day, which is never good. Listen, I think that there's no way Big Ben doesn't play. Like Big Ben, you would have to restrain him from playing in this game. But you're right. I think that last drive against the Bengals was very indicative. The Bengals with 30 yards of penalties last week in just the most dramatic of the wild card weekend games, how Pittsburgh ended up winning that game was just unbelievable. But on that final drive, when Big Ben came in after the injury that we're talking about right now was sustained late in the third quarter when Vontaze Burfict at the Bengals pile-drived him into the ground, on that last drive, Big Ben couldn't do anything. And the one pass that he threw to Antonio Brown, the play that ended up hurting Brown, when again Burfict was the culprit throwing the shoulder into Brown's head, defenseless receiver, Big Ben came back to the sidelines and said, you can't call another play like that. He said that to Mike Tomlin, he admitted later. I can't do that. I can't. And that ball was nowhere near Brown. Mm. So he was able to get it downfield, but with no accuracy whatsoever. So we can't assume that even if Big Ben plays, he will be capable of anything. And just to give you an idea of what Antonio Brown's absence means, so just a segue back to Brown for a second, who now, as you say, has been ruled out. Antonio Brown has missed 88 plays over the last two seasons with the Pittsburgh Steelers. In those 88 plays, the Steelers have averaged 1.6 yards per play.
Wow.
Now, Dave, I'm told that's not very good.
That's a great stat.
Yeah, so what do you make of the Steelers team? There's never been a circumstance like this before.
Unbelievable. And having beaten the Broncos earlier in the season. I mentioned that match. Not only was that at home, not only did they have Roethlisberger and Brown firing, and Brown was hugely influential that day, they were going up against a Broncos secondary that was banged up, and that's now fully fit as well, and they're going into Mile High, so completely different scenario to the match earlier on in the season.
Yeah, the Broncos didn't have TJ Ward that day. They didn't have Darian Stewart. Omar Bolden was out too. And that's the most points the Broncos, as a result, have given up all year, 34 points in that game. Also the most yards they've given up this season, 377. But yeah, throw it all out the window. All those guys are back. And the Denver defense, let's say the Steelers had all their players. Let's say Big Ben, Brown, and D'Angelo were playing. They're still the number one defense, the Broncos defense, that is, in the NFL. Yards per play allowed, just 4.4. Yards per rush attempt, they've allowed only 3.3. That's number one. Yards per pass attempt allowed, you ask? That's number one, too, for the Broncos, 5.6. Sacks, that's number one for the Broncos defense, 52. And that's even if they had to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at full strength. I mean, it's so tough to imagine what Pittsburgh could do in this game, even with a Big Ben, you know, suiting up, but perhaps hampered beyond belief with a, you know, Martavis Bryant and Marcus Wheaton he's still got to throw to, but it's going to be Fitzgerald Toussaint in the backfield. Just so tough to imagine how Pittsburgh could win this. But, you know, the spread's the great equalizer, as one of my friends likes to say, and if it's high enough, you know, you can always, you know, make a case for Pittsburgh covering. But we have no idea what the number will be at this point.
No, we don't. We don't. And we've got deep into this preview without mentioning Peyton Manning as well, who came back in for Brock Osweiler in that final regular season game against San Diego. And he was 6 of 9 through a lot of short passes. We learnt nothing about Peyton Manning's health and his ability, really, Gil, at this point in his career in that game against San Diego. And we might not learn that much against the Steelers if they don't need to utilize the deep ball.
Right. And, you know, I talk about the great equalizer, the spread is the great equalizer. Well, Peyton Manning, with all that we've said about the Steelers, Peyton Manning might be the great equalizer in this game, and not in a good way, right?
With
all
his absolutely, blows. Yeah.
Yeah, partially torn plantar fascia injury being one of many issues with Peyton Manning. I guess the only insight I can add, because you're right, what you said about Peyton Manning is exactly right. We may not even see anything from him in this game if the Steelers are that inept. But the one thing I guess I can provide is that, you know, take cold weather games, and this will be a cold weather game, though not anything close to what it was like in Minnesota last week. Peyton Manning in cold weather, we have two playoff games anyway of 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below in his career, and Manning averaged just 5.6 yards per pass attempt, 81.7 passer rating, and just a 44.7 QBR in those games. So the weather's not going to do him any favors either at his increasingly advanced age. So if you're a Pittsburgh backer, if you take all of that, what we talked about, and you're looking for reasons to bet the Steelers, whatever that spread becomes, throw that into the mix as well as a knock on the Broncos. But yeah, you know, we've pretty much done, at this point, you do all you can with all that information and you wait to see what the number is, and then you go accordingly. Again, to me, if it were still the 7 that was posted most of the week, the play is on the Broncos.
Thank you, Gil. As always, a stats-packed podcast from you, Gil, and always a pleasure. Enjoy your time in Vegas, and we'll catch up for the conference games next week, Gil.
My man, Dave, always a pleasure. Feel better, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.